Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
It is V-Day, V-E Day, the end of the war in Europe and the beginning of the post-war order. I welcome Anatole Levin, the Eurasian Project Manager of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft, a man who's a veteran of several major publications. And I go to one of his previous postings, the Financial Times, looking not only at the remembrance of 1945, but the parade to be held in the next 24 hours in Red Square, now called the Kremlin. China's Xi attacks U.S. hegemony, that quote, ahead of Putin's summit. This has to do with the plans for the General Secretary and President of China to be next to Mr. Putin to review the parade, which is an annual event, very important to the Russian people. At this point, an attachment to the Great Patriotic War during a war in Ukraine is vital to Russian sense of order. Once again, the post-war order is not obvious in the war in Ukraine, but having China stand next to Russia can be a sign of where we're headed in the 21st century. Anatole, Xi Jinping is making sure that America knows, the U.S. knows, Mr. Trump knows, that he and Mr. Putin regard the U.S. as the problem. Hegemony is a very impolite word in geopolitical circles. It means that you're trying to dominate. You're an aggressor. You're breaking the world order. What do you measure as the significance of Xi and Putin standing next together after the war in Europe? Does this mean that Asia is now united and that Europe should get on board? Does this mean that U.S. should back off? How do you hear this? Good evening to you.
Hello, John. Well, it's certainly a very strong signal, and it's a signal from the Chinese that they will not reduce their help, their de facto help to Russia over Ukraine in terms of trade, technology, buying Russian energy. And it's a sign, yes, that Russia and China will stand together in opposing what they see as, yes, I mean, American attempts to maintain primacy over them. And of course, it also strengthens Putin in the Ukrainian peace negotiations, because it's I think perhaps above all a warning to the Trump administration not to try to introduce secondary sanctions against Russia. In other words, target second countries that are, you know, that are trading with Russia, because China will push back against that very strongly. But at the same time, of course, this is still far short of an actual alliance. China has no intention of sending Chinese troops or even overtly Chinese weapons to help Russia in Ukraine. And Russia would not fight for China over Taiwan, even if Russia could, which of course it couldn't because it doesn't have the means. So it's a strong signal. And the fact that, yes, I mean, this is happening on Victory Day, which, as you said, is a very, very important day for the Russians, is highly symbolic. Now, there is, however, a colossal question hanging over this day in Moscow, because in recent days, of course, the Ukrainians have been bombarding Moscow trying to with drones. And, you know, the Russians have threatened semi-publicly that if the Ukrainians actually attack the parade, Russia could even respond, you know, with nuclear missiles, or certainly would respond with massive attacks on Kiev. But from what I gather, there has been a strong message from Washington to Kiev not to do that. Because, of course, I mean, that would totally wreck the peace process, but also, you know, at attacking an event at which the leader of China was present would and, you know, and, because the Chinese would undoubtedly think that America, if not behind this, had not done anything to stop it. I mean, that would create a hideous international crisis. So that I think the Ukrainians have been told not to, and I hope that they stick to that.
Let's go to another important capital on this day. That would be Berlin. V-Day is ironic for Berlin, VE Day, because it was the complete disaster of the Third Reich on this day and the ruins of Berlin. If any of you younger people have not seen the photographs, Berlin was a pile of bricks. That's what was left after the Allies finished with defeating the last of the Hitlerites. And the rebuild began at that moment with women lined up, bucket lines almost, passing bricks down. The bodies were buried under the rubble everywhere. Wandering through the street was a post-apocalyptic scene that only Hollywood could try to come close to. That is a memory that all German families have. And here today, we have a new leader for Germany in Friedrich Merz, leading the CDU, a coalition with the SPD, the Socialist Democratic Party. At the same time, we have a message from the German president. This isn't quite the same presidential mission that we have in the presidential system of the U.S., but it's a significant voice. His name is Frank-Walter Steinmeier. German president warns of Donald Trump's epochal break, writes the Financial Times, with post-war order. There it is again. Frank-Walter Steinmeier criticizes U.S. president's breach of values, in quotes, underpinning European peace since the end of World War II. Anatole, your comment on Germany warning the U.S. that it is responsible for a breakdown in order. How do you think of this when you hear it?
It's a sign of how bitterly hostile European establishments are to the Trump administration and to the peace process in Ukraine. Whether it's entirely fair or accurate, I'm not so sure. Because, of course, as the Germans ought to remember, I mean, the post-Second World War order involved the partition of Germany and Soviet troops on the Elbe in the middle of Europe, barely 100 miles from the French border. Now, of course, the conflict in Europe is happening in Ukraine, hundreds and hundreds of miles to the east, and which, you know, after 1945, I mean, there were questions over Soviet rule over Poland, but no, never any questions about in Ukraine. So some of this, I mean, when the Europeans talk about the post-Cold War order, they're actually not describing, the post-war order, they're not describing the post-1945 order, they're describing the post-1991 order, which, of course, lasted for a much shorter time and involved, you know, a brief window of complete Western dominance, which is now over, as demonstrated also by the Putin-Xi meeting in Moscow. So, you know, also here there are, you know, frankly, European dreams of returning to, you know, a situation that is now gone and will not come back.
And that is something that is being accepted. You talk to all the Europeans, and you talk to many of the major Asian opinion makers. Is it gone, or is it in disrepair? Does it need attention? Or has 3 months of the Trump administration finished the story?
Well, it's not just 3 months of the Trump administration. You know, it's 30 years of the radical economic rise of China, and to a lesser extent, other countries as well. It's 30 years of European economic stagnation and increasing domestic political crisis. I mean, the point is that, you know, 30 years ago, the West, led by America, looked totally dominant. It isn't anymore. But many of the Europeans, I think, are still living in that dream world, frankly. I mean, my fear is that they may do what they did between 2016 and 2020, which is basically just stand pat and pray that the Democrats come back to power in 2028. But even if the Democrats do, we will still be living in a very, very different world.
Germany needs energy, needs cheap energy in order to reawaken its economy. Everybody's agreed on this. The source of cheap energy is Russia, obviously. Next door, the pipelines that haven't been destroyed are intact, ready to go. Is that a deal that we can look forward to being negotiated following the combat in Ukraine?
Well, if the war in Ukraine can be brought to an end, and brought to an end, you know, not just by a ceasefire, but by an actual peace settlement, then I think yes. I mean, this is possible. And certainly, I mean, German public opinion is very divided. There are those who are now extremely hostile to Russia and would not wish to restore any kind of German energy dependence. But there are many others who are by now so alarmed and even desperate about the state of the German economy and, you know, so hostile to buying more expensive energy from the United States. That, yes, they would like to go along with a deal like that. But it is obviously conditional on peace in Ukraine. The Germans could not buy, well, it's legally impossible for them under European sanctions to go back to buying large quantities of Russian energy while the war goes on.
Just a quick note, Trump announces a trade deal with the UK. That's the first deal since the Liberation Day. Is this a significant advance of the relationship between London and Washington that has become almost a second consideration for some? Does this mean anything in the UK?
It means a lot in the UK because the UK economy is also in very poor shape. And the British establishment is terrified of higher U.S. Sanctions, or of course, of being caught in the middle of a trade war between the U.S. and Europe. So yes, I mean this is significant, but it's also part of the this largely illusory British belief now that they you must stay close to the United States, and that in the end you can't break with Washington. And this, I think, will allow the British to go on indulging in this illusion for a bit longer, the illusion of the special relationship, which doesn't actually exist, really.
Anatole Levin of the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. We're going to move momentarily to the conflict in Kashmir. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.